It's a bird, it's a plane. No, it's a superhero from an orange grove. Yeah, that's right. Captain Citrus is a real offering from Marvel Comics. The character was reimagined by Marvel at the request of Florida's citrus industry. The growers want Captain Citrus to use his juiced-up powers to help them sell more OJ. Marvel's successful films and comics, from Spider-Man to The Avengers, have made them a hit with audiences and businesses. NPR's Greg Allen has this report on the growth of what's known in the trade as custom comics.
Marvel has teamed with Lexus, M&M's, and Kiehl's, a company that sells natural skincare products. But there are dozens and dozens of other companies lining up to work with one of America's hottest brands. In Tampa recently, Marvel unveiled its latest custom project, commissioned and paid for by Florida's orange growers. It features one of Marvel's top comics brand, the Avengers.
Iron Man, Thor, Black Widow, Captain America. But who is Captain Citrus?
Florida's citrus industry has been hit hard in recent years by disease, which has hurt production, and also by declining consumer demand for orange juice. With all the challenges, the industry asked Marvel to redesign its Captain Citrus character. The old Captain Citrus was basically an orange with legs and a cape. The new Captain Citrus is cut. He's young, fit, and in his first comic adventure, uses his solar power to help the Avengers defeat an evil villain. And Marvel's Bill Roseman says he starts his day with a glass of orange juice.
He lives on an orange grove, and in the comic book, you see him with his family. They're having breakfast. You see how orange juice brings the family together and kickstarts their day.
It may seem a bit commercial, to purists, maybe even crass, to use heroes like Thor and Iron Man to help sell orange juice. But it's hardly new. Marvel Custom Solutions, a special division of the comics company, has been doing it for more than a decade. And long before that, comics were using their characters in advertising. Mike Perkins is a Marvel artist. He draws Captain America and other characters. He remembers seeing Marvel heroes sell products in comics when he was young.
And, you know, they got those little one-page strips for Twinkies or Hostess cupcakes or something like that. It's a way of connecting to the audience.
Marvel Comics has been around now for more than 70 years. But recently, the company and its comics have reached a new level of popularity. At Tampa's Heroes Haven Comics, marketing director Ivan Plaza says he's seeing a lot of new customers.
The movies have been helping bring that traffic, you know, the regular consumer that never knew about comics or they just found out that they love, you know, these characters, and the only way to follow their stories is through comic books. So then we get new people every week.
Businesses are also more interested in comics than ever before. Marvel's Bill Roseman says his division will probably work with 100 clients this year. The projects vary. Work with brands like Harley Davidson and Lexus involve comic book art, but also using the vehicles in Marvel films. For projects like Captain Citrus, the company works with educators to create teacher guides to go along with the comic giveaways. And there can be a lot of comics. Florida's citrus industry is printing 1 million Captain Citrus comics to distribute through the schools. Roseman says that's why Marvel sees these custom editions as opportunities.
Every day we remind ourselves that, hey, many people may see these comics that normally don't see our comics. So these will be read by parents and kids, and this may be their first comic ever.
Roseman said Marvel can work with almost any company as long as it has a story it wants to tell. As to Captain Citrus,
find out in the all-new Avengers Assemble digital comic.
Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
TV showrunner Shonda Rhimes is going for a hat trick at ABC. She already has two hit shows under her belt with the long-running medical drama Grey's Anatomy and the operatic Washington-driven Scandal. Now Rhimes, one of network TV's most successful producers, is backing a provocative new series starring Oscar nominee Viola Davis.
I'm Professor Annalise Keating, and this is Criminal Law 100, or as I prefer to call it,
How to Get Away with Murder.
How to Get Away with Murder, a drama from Rhimes' Shondaland production company, debuts tonight. Now, this means Rhimes has locked down ABC's primetime Thursday night programming. Here to talk about how it happened is NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. Hey there, Eric.
Hey.
All right, so now Shonda Rhimes has a huge chunk of ABC's primetime block. How did it happen?
Well, you know, Rhymes is a prolific producer, and she's the creator of some of their biggest shows with young people, especially young female viewers, Grey's Anatomy and Scandal. So when CBS got Thursday Night Football, it only made sense for ABC to turn all of the Shondaland shows into a night of counter-programming. And it's only increased Rhymes' visibility. I mean, she's already a rarity, a black female executive producer in a town run by white men. And there's a sense that she's carefully built up her empire of shows to the point where she's now got two dramas in primetime starring powerful black female characters. That's something that's never happened in the history of television, let alone involving one producer. So we've got a great clip of her writing for Kerry Washington's Olivia Pope on Scandal. And she's telling her boyfriend, a married president of the United States, about the toll that their affair is having on her.
You're married. You have children. You're the leader of the free world. You are away. By definition, you're away. You're unavailable. I wait for you. I watch for you. My whole life is you. I can't breathe because I'm waiting for you. You own me. You control me. I belong to you.
You own me. So much passion.
Probably more than we need. Now, Eric, there's already some drama actually surrounding the show. With a recent review in the New York Times, critic Alessandra Stanley wrote that Rhymes is, quote, embraced the trite but persistent caricature of the angry black woman, she goes on, recast it in her own image and made it enviable.
Yeah.
How'd that go over?
Not too well. That piece was criticized by a lot of people, including the New York Times public editor. The writer didn't point out, for example, that How to Get Away with Murder wasn't created by Rhymes. It was created by Pete Nowalk, a producer who worked on her other shows. And he's that series' showrunner. As the showrunner, or the top creative voice on Grey's Anatomy and Scandal, Shonda Rhimes has managed to get mostly white TV audiences to embrace her vision of a melodramatic, multicultural world in which gay characters, female characters, and characters of color all have more visibility and power than we're used to seeing on television. And that just makes for a more vibrant and creative show, which also happens to look a lot more like America.
Now, is part of the issue not that she's a black woman, but the fact that she's a well-known showrunner, right? And there aren't that many sort of brand name producers on network TV anymore.
Yeah, that might be possible. I mean, once upon a time, we had producers like All in the Family's Norman Lear, or Dynasty's Aaron Spelling, or Ally McBeal's David E. Kelly. And they were household names. You'd see their names featured in the opening credits to their shows. And they were serious power brokers in Hollywood. And now we've got fewer famous names like that in network television. You know, you think of somebody like Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane, maybe as the exception. And the spotlight has moved to cable TV showrunners like Mad Men's Matt Weiner or The Sopranos' David Chase. Now, Shonda Rhimes is special for a lot of reasons because she's the only person doing what she's doing, and she's doing it in a way that proves the value of fresh and diverse voices on TV. She's poised to become the backbone of one of the most important nights on a major TV network. And it's all part of network TV's desire to find what works and replicate it. So if they can find a producer who knows how to draw an important audience and spread that sensibility around their network, then they've got a greater chance of sustaining strong ratings.
Eric, thanks so much for watching for us.
Always glad to talk to you.
That's Eric Deggans. He's NPR's TV critic.
This is Fresh Air. For the major broadcast networks, tonight is the official start of the new TV season. Our TV critic, David Bianculli, has a list of the new shows you should make an effort to sample. He says it is not a very long list.
On broadcast television each fall, in the best years, there's at least one new show that clearly is a must-watch. You must watch Pushing Daisies. You must watch Lost. You must watch Friday Night Lights. But that doesn't always happen. And it certainly doesn't happen this fall. There's not a single must-see show in the mix. But most of the networks have at least one ought-to-try show. And two of them premiere tonight. One is the Fox Network's Gotham, the most talked-about show of the new season. It's a prequel to the DC Comics Batman franchise, set in Gotham City at the very moment a young boy named Bruce Wayne witnesses the death of his parents by an armed robber. Investigating the crime is the hero of Gotham, a hero without a costume, a straight-arrow young detective who eventually will rule the police force as the man named Commissioner Gordon. But here, he's just a cop named Jim, consoling a young boy named Bruce who's just become an orphan. Ben McKenzie, star of Southland and the O.C., plays Jim Gordon.
When I was about your age, drunk driver hit our car. killed my dad. I was right next to him. I know how you feel right now. And I promise you, however dark and scary the world might be right now, there will be light. There will be light, Rose.
But at that moment in Gotham City, the dominant shade is darkness. Organized crime controls most of the town and much of the police force. And the series introduces us to characters who, in time, will don alter egos and become Catwoman or the Riddler or the Penguin and so on. To put it in terms of an SAT analogy question, Gotham is to Batman as Smallville is to Superman. A prequel series where we don't get the costumes, but we do get lots of motivation and character development. The Gotham pilot, which airs tonight on Fox, looks cinematic and features some strong performances, especially by Donal Logue as a somewhat shifty detective and Robin Lord Taylor as the man who would be Penguin. It's definitely worth a look. So is Scorpion, a CBS series that also premieres tonight. It sounds like a superhero show, and in a way, it is. Like the X-Men, it's about a team of young misfits with extraordinary gifts, crafted into a crime-fighting and world-saving team by a gruff father figure. Except these misfits are geniuses. It's like the gang from the Big Bang Theory, only they're spending their time stopping terrorists rather than buying comic books. The off-center personalities of these team members are what might make Scorpion a hit, along with the unexpectedly sincere and effective appeal of Catherine McPhee, a former American Idol contestant who proves a much better actress here than she did as one of the leads in NBC's musical drama, Smash. The other show worth sampling during this premiere week is ABC's Black-ish, which premieres Wednesday. Most of the jokes in the first episode are too obvious, but at least this is a sitcom that's about something, that has a definite point of view. Anthony Anderson plays a husband and father who worked hard to hand his family the American dream, only to worry, even if they don't, that their dream may have turned out to be a little too white. It's a concern amplified by the live-in grandfather, played by Larry Fishburne, whose scenes with Anderson are the best part of the pilot. It's still rare for a primetime TV series to tackle a significant topic, which is why it's worth taking Black-ish for a spin and even giving it a little time to grow. I have the same reaction to a new Fox drama series that premiered last week, Red Band Society, which is about teens facing serious illnesses. I like the effort these shows are making, even if I'm not as completely sold on the shows themselves. The other shows worth noting don't premiere until October, but I'll at least identify them now. Fox has Grace Point, a remake of the British miniseries Broadchurch, which even has the same leading man, David Tennant, but this time adopting an American accent. I like the original just fine, but this American remake has its merits, starting with Anna Gunn from Breaking Bad. Finally, the CW network has two new dramas, and they're both surprisingly entertaining. One is another DC Comics-inspired show, The Flash, that's actually a spin-off of Arrow, but is much lighter and much better than that returning superhero series. And then there's Jane the Virgin, based on a telenovela from Venezuela, starring Gina Rodriguez as a 23-year-old single woman who gets artificially inseminated by mistake. Of all the new fall shows, Jane the Virgin is the one where I'm most looking forward to episode 2. With most of this year's shows, it isn't even any fun slogging through episode 1.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of the website TV Worth Watching and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. Coming up, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews a new album by pianist Jason Moran. This is Fresh Air.
The fall television season is underway, and one show's already getting a lot of buzz, probably because of its name, Black-ish. It looks at a black middle-class suburban family, and the show airs in the same month The Cosby Show celebrates its 30th anniversary. Karen Grigsby-Bates of NPR's Code Switch team looks at how black families have been portrayed on television sitcoms.
Black-ish is a sitcom about ad exec Andre Johnson, his doctor wife, and his attempts to keep their kids culturally grounded. The Johnsons, says Andre, are living the dream.
We're lucky. They've got a great house, four great kids, and my pops.
And it owes a lot to another show that aired in the 80s.
The Cosby Show introduced large swaths of the American public that didn't have regular relationships with black families and blacks to the notion of what a black family could be.
Darnell Hunt heads the Ralph Bunche Institute at UCLA and has studied diversity in the entertainment industry for two decades. Hunt says the TV Huxtables were an upper-middle-class black family, close-knit with professional parents who liked teaching real-life lessons. When Theo Huxtable tells his physician dad he doesn't need college to thrive, he'd rather live like regular people, Cliff Huxtable gives him an economics lesson with play money as Theo watches his salary shrink.
$350 for taxes.
Whoa!
Yeah, because the government comes for the regular people first.
The Cosby Show inspired a spate of other black family comedies. Shows like 227 and Rock that were set in the inner city with families that were not living the lush life gained some traction, too. Julian Chambliss, a historian at Rollins College in Florida, says the years after Cosby became a hit spawned shows with a wider spectrum of black family life.
They had a aspirational narrative, sort of family cohesion in the face of very real problems that were affecting the African-American experience.
Rock centered around a charismatic Baltimore garbage man who worried about money a lot. Here, Rock is arguing with his wife, Eleanor, about a small purchase she'd made.
Eleanor, we're in a recession. Banks are failing every day. Companies are laying people off by the thousands. Look, and if things are going to improve, we all have to do our part to bring the national budget down.
So are you saying that the future of the entire U.S. economy hinges on this one $48 platter?
Well, yeah.
In the mid-90s, a show built around and named for stand-up comedian Bernie Mac followed Mac as he adjusted to becoming the guardian for his sister's three children. Greg Braxton, television writer at the Los Angeles Times, says Mac, known for his cheeky, profane comedy, made some people nervous.
I remember when Bernie Mac came on, he scared a lot of white audiences and a lot of white executives.
Why?
Because he had an edge about him.
Now that's the problem, America. You can beat some of the people some of the time, but you can't beat your kids.
He was kidding, America. Mac portrayed a sometimes exasperated, loving father figure to his family, but he was old school when it came to stuff like faking illness, as 8-year-old Jordan found out.
Get up, boy! I'm gonna count to three. Get up!
I don't feel good.
Feel better. One.
But I'm wheezing.
Wheeze your butt to the bathroom, boy, too.
Jordan went to school, and Bernie Mac became a crossover hit. The latest version of TV's black family is the Johnsons. In Black-ish, the Johnson kids don't see race as particularly relevant, which pains their father. When his son announces he wants a bar mitzvah because all his friends are having one, Andre Johnson explodes.
I do not have to sit back and listen to you rave about other kids' bar mitzvahs. So, next Saturday, when you turn 13, you're becoming a man too. A black man, because I'm throwing you an African rites of passage ceremony.
Rollins historian Julian Chambliss says worry about what's being lost during assimilation into the mainstream is central to the theme of the show.
In a program like Black-ish, the loss of understanding of self, I think is probably at the core of that narrative. And so you can be successful, but you have to be yourself and not feel that you're being imposed upon or controlled by a kind of white standard.
UCLA's Darnell Hunt says the people behind Black-ish are acutely aware there are past TV stereotypes of black family life they want to avoid.
They're very carefully trying to think about the way in which they're communicating blackness in the show.
If the show's producers can communicate blackness in a nuanced way that resonates with and beyond black viewers, they hope Black-ish might have a shot at becoming the Cosby of the 21st century. Karen Grigsby Bates, NPR News.